watching Tottenham on a Tuesday night. You play Thursday.
Hello everyone and welcome to our What a Night, part of the 90 Min Podcast Network. For the first time, I think in 2 years, we're all sitting together recording live. Hello.
Hey.
So we've got Hunter Godson, Sean Walsh, Dan Kilpatrick, and Ethan Standard. How is everyone?
Yeah, good. Very
well, good.
Apart from the weekend. Shawnee, you were the only one of us that wasn't in the ground, so get rid of our unconscious bias and tell us how you experienced the game on the weekend.
I feel like it was quite an easy game to kind of take in. Like, I think everyone kind of agrees the first half, it was probably the most promising half of football we've played under Nuno in terms of trying to control the game with the ball, in terms of trying to move up the pitch, in terms of having like a real strategy, like the way we were moving Chelsea's three centre-backs around. It looked as if we kind of turned this tactical corner, and then we come out for the second half, we get the wind really knocked out of us by the first and especially the second goal, I think. And then we just never really recovered, and we kind of entered that phase where you're trying to attack, but you don't really know how to do it, so instead you just end up giving away loads of chances, and I think we conceded three or four really big chances, and eventually... I think Gary Neville said on comms that, you know, you wouldn't put it apart. You wouldn't say it's unfair on Chelsea if they got another one now. And they did. And it just felt really, you could see like the way the camera was panning around the stadium, like it was really kind of emptying out. There wasn't, but it wasn't like sour, like an Everton or a West Ham or something, like where you could like hear the fans turning on them. It was almost kind of apathetic. It was just like, okay, I'm getting out of here.
Yeah. No, it felt like a really practical exit. It was like really formal and efficient. People were like, okay, 3-0 down, I'm off. Cheers.
That's exactly it. The guys next to me just went, I'm just going to go. And then got off. I was like, yeah, probably for the best way. Don't. I know I was sitting right next to the Chelsea fans who were having a wonderful time.
They were living the dream, weren't they? I thought they were pretty rubbish up until like the sort of 3-0 and then the final whistle when they... we're just lapping it up. Did you see that?
Yeah, they sort just kept singing Champions of Europe, we know what we are. And we're like, yeah.
We were nearly worse.
Yeah.
We could have been.
Can't really argue with that one.
What was it? What made it so good in the first half? What'd you put it down to, Dan?
I think it was just a lot more high energy and progressive than anything else we've seen so far, and it felt quite smart, it felt intelligent, it felt like Nuno had really thought about it. There were lots of little bits that kind of came together quite nicely.
Did you have the ooh when you saw the lineup?
I think everyone did, it was an exciting lineup. It was kind of what most fans would have picked. I think it was just kind of all the sort of good players in roughly the right positions.
I would say roughly.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if you'd swapped Eddie and Lo Celso, it would have been kind of everyone in you know, more or less the right place. It felt like there were lots of little elements of it that had clearly been thought about. You know, Dier was really kind of up Lukaku's arse to begin with, which I think worked pretty well, even though he did create that one good chance in transition. It was a kind of high, risky press that I think everyone wants to see. There were, you know, kind of nice bits where Spurs were dragging Chelsea's midfielder out of position and creating chances, which kind of led to the Reguilon chance. So I think that it wasn't perfect, and I think we'll come on to Dele and Kane's positions, which both felt quite strange. But I think it was a very different approach to Crystal Palace, and the approach to Crystal Palace does not have a future. You know, and if Nuno does that, it's not going to work for him at Spurs. But the first half of Chelsea, I think there is a future there if Spurs can keep at that and refine it.
Let's do that as our kind of like good bit then, because I think it's undeniable, like you said, Sean, in the first half, I think the vast majority of Spurs fans would have come away at half-time and been like, wow, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it feels like we've been starved of that kind of performance against certainly a bigger and better side in a long time, you know. Last year in the Mourinho, it was a lot of try and sneak an early goal and then camp an hour and a half, and didn't always go that way. Even in the latter stages under Poch, wasn't that much of going toe-to-toe with them. It was more just kind of reserving the energy. So this felt like a really kind of mature performance. And like Dan said, like the little elements, like... Because I think we talked about earlier, Hunter, that maybe the more logical way would have been to go with a back five against their back five and try and match him up. And he didn't. He went for something quite, like you said, Dan, more well thought out.
Mm.
And
quite open.
Open. I mean, there's a lot of space in the middle. Like, I think that's what he wanted. I think he was trying to give Ndombele, Lo Celso and Dele some like space to really kind of carry the ball and move forward. And then when we just got to the top end of the pitch, it was just really weird because of where Son and Kane were.
Mm.
I wonder, I've got a bit of a theory, a lot of people sort of have read a lot into the idea of Kane being as a left winger. I wonder how much of that was down to Nuno trying to mix things up and how much down to the fact that Son was not fit. And the idea of Son having to do the wide version of stuff just was not a possibility at the weekend. Or possibly, maybe he was trying to just get Son against one defender and trying to get Kane against another. What do you reckon, mate?
I reckon, well, from what I was watching, I was thinking that he decided that Christensen was the weakest of the three in terms of the physical battle, so he decided to push Kane onto him with the chance of Son going round him. But Kane lost nearly every battle he had with Christensen, bar the one where he managed to slip Reguilon in. And that's the Kane we're used to seeing, where in that moment it was he took the impact, managed to win the ball, got there ahead of the midfielder and then played the ball in. That was probably the most disjointed, that and Dele were the three that I just couldn't quite understand. But it was, as these guys have said, it was a really brave formation. And the fact that Tuchel pulled Mason Mount, he doesn't often pull Mason Mount,
he's like his go to
exactly,
he
suggests that, and it was probably one of the poorest games I've ever seen Mason Mount have. I think that suggests that there was a place to build from in the first half. But
yeah,
then you do have to talk about the whole other half of football, which there was also.
Just before we do that, it killed me that we wasted the Reguilon chance. Just seeing the way that it played out, that was our chance. And then I feel like we could have gone and been a bit more defensive in the second half had we taken it. Kind of felt like he threw everything at it and was like, it better work now.
I don't know if it's being a Spurs fan and just being beaten down over the years, but I just feel like if that was Alonso in that position, I'd just be like, this is a goal, 100%. And as Reguilon moved
like
into that position,
right?
I just thought,
X across the box.
He's not going to... I just had no belief that he was either going to dink it back post, which was because obviously Rudiger's there, right? Rudiger's got in the right position. The only position you can be in is between the two players at the back post and him. So Reguilon has a choice if he can dink it, which is risky.
There was definitely a moment though where he could have
whipped
the channel.
Right.
I think
okay,
before
yeah.
there was a second
just
before you got in where it was a really easy just pass.
But even then, the ball in between, what was it, the corridor of uncertainty. That was open. If he really put some weight on the pass,
and you
but
believe
he,
that you're going to make it as well, right? You
and he just
it.
Went for neither and basically just passed it straight to Rudiger, which it was. And it, you know, that was one of our two chances in the first half.
He's
time,
such
basically.
A confidence player, isn't he, Rudiger?
Mm. I mean, I think he actually played quite well in the first half.
Yeah.
Was again, he'd had a fairly dodgy game against Chelsea last year. I remember Azpilicueta putting him on his arse after like 5 minutes, and I thought he was playing well. And to be fair, he didn't have a bad game. But yeah, in that moment, that's what it will come. He's quite young. He's a young player, and it will come. But yeah, we really we're not good enough.
Been good as well. That's the thing. He's actually a decent cross of the ball. So it's just really, really unfortunate that at a key time. Well, unfortunate, or perhaps there's something a little bit more at play there. Let's go on to the bad bits, and we've got to talk about the second half, Sean. What happens that we just can't recover from?
I think Mount coming on, Kante coming on, because that's just such a huge game-changing sub that Chelsea can make. But this is the kind of argument that's going back years to, like, remember the FA Cup semi-final in 2017 where they brought on like what Hazard and Costa and all these guys, and we just couldn't really compete with that kind of level of squad. We can't compete with Kante coming off the bench, slightly changing the kind of midfield battle the way he did. It made it harder for us when we can see from a corner, which wasn't very well defended.
That felt weak, didn't it?
Yeah.
Conceived like that.
Yeah. I think give credit to Chelsea because the way Silva started outside the box and then kind of ghosted in and it was the kind of perfect cross to get there. But yeah, not great. It's not great when you have a considered set piece. It's always one of those where you're thinking the odds are in your favour. You need to get rid of this. But then the second goal, such a kind of meek showing from Dyer, just like kind of not really get his body behind the ball, but not really shift towards it either. It's kind of like this half-hearted stick, move to the side, stick my leg out kind of thing. And I think I said to you earlier, Hunter, about Lloris, like, even if he makes an attempt to save the shot, he might claw it back off the line.
Mm.
And instead, he's just kind of watching it. And
I'm quite surprised by that. I just didn't think Tyrone Lloris were really to blame for it. I just thought it was a bit of a free goal. I think if anything was the problem, it was the weird amount of space that Kante just kind of popped up in.
Mm.
But I'm not saying Sean's wrong, I just hadn't really thought of it that way.
I think it's because this morning we watched it back and the shot's meek.
Oh really?
It goes slow.
I know Lloris did just kind of stand there, but I think sometimes when your weight's gone in one direction,
yeah,
actually reversing it is harder than it looks.
Yeah,
I think more than anything, it was the reaction after they scored the first goal was, oh what do we do now? It wasn't right. Okay, get it back. Try and make something. We really, really all of a sudden looked scared on the, like, in the first half. I noticed we were playing out from some quite dangerous areas in our own half, creating sort of triangles and playing up the pitch. And I was like,
I love that.
That's right. That's one thing that Emerson brings that I think the other two fullbacks don't bring, is he's very confident on the ball. He's confident with players getting very close to him and sort of dragging players out of position.
Question, do you bring Jaffet back?
Into right back? No, I don't think you do.
Wow, so that's his sort of, he's lost his spot.
I think you do.
You think you do?
Well, I think on reflection, Emerson's had a pretty poor game against Palace and not a great one against Chelsea. And I don't think Tanganga did an awful lot wrong.
Have you changed your opinion?
I think it would be a bit harsh.
Can you change your opinion on Emerson? Like,
I think I was probably too generous on Emerson last week when we put him in the good. given he got rinsed by Zaha, really, and that was quite tone-setting for a really difficult afternoon. I thought he was better against Alonso, but he still lost him at the start of the second half.
It's Alonso
volley.
As well.
Yeah, I mean, that volley that was the first of their two corners.
Yeah.
Emerson just let him get behind him. I don't think he's been, you know, he looks awful or anything, but I hadn't seen enough of him. And I think Tanganga was having a really good amount of kind of aggression and sort of impetus on that flank. So.
And also, I just feel like Tanganga's actually got legit pace. I feel like Emerson looks like he should be quick, but he doesn't feel like he backs his pace against.
He's very warrior of him.
Yeah.
Oh no, we've signed Ori. We've signed Ori again. The only problem I have with Tanganga is I felt like that red card was, well, it was this close against City, and then it was again, I can't remember who played after that, but he got booked fairly within that game.
He booked early against Wolves,
and then he gets the two against Palace, and I think I love the aggression, honestly, I absolutely love it, but in the Premier League.
Well, it'll be interesting to see who plays against Wolves tomorrow, assuming the Dharma's going to play, because Tanganga did have a bit of a nightmare against him.
Yeah, but everyone does, he's just...
I know.
Don't give it to Emerson. Give it to Doherty.
Do Wolves go strong, do you think? Do Wolves go, like, seeing as they have...
Just Spurs, I mean...
Yeah, well, exactly. Do we go strong? Yeah. It's a bit like,
I think we need to win big time. I think we really need the League Cup as an option. And also, I think the League Cup is such a... If you get a good run, get a couple of good draws in the League Cup, you can be in semi-final by January.
I just think you needed a bit of momentum going into Sunday as well. It's been so bad since the international break. Like, it's just been three really turgid displays, and right now there's not much going for us. And Arsenal, as bad as they are and have been, at least they've been winning in the last couple of weeks. So then going into the Derby, so if we even if Wolves do make wholesale changes tomorrow, they don't see it as a priority to be in this cup. Even if we go and win 2-3-0, that's at least better for us.
What do we think to the idea of potentially Dele playing against Wolves back in his normal position as opposed to left back.
Oh, God. Could
be nice. is this where Nuno sees him, though? Does Nuno see him as a box-to-box runner?
That's what he said.
Yeah, exactly. So that's...
To be fair, he looks and is clearly on paper incredible fitness-wise at the moment. His fitness is in a brilliant place.
I think that was a mass... That's like almost that Mesut Ozil doesn't run. So it's just a complete... It's one of those things...
That's nonsense. Dele always... Yeah, exactly. Even on the Pochettino's team, he used to run as much as anyone, apart from occasionally Eriksen.
Yeah.
I think normally Eriksen would cover the most ground and Dele would be second in a typical kind of classic Poch performance. Yeah. That was how the numbers kind of always fell. So he's always had a great engine. I wrote a piece for Standard today... just kind of discussing Dele, and I think Nuno's seen that he's got a great engine and wants to use it in a different way than certainly Pochettino did. I think that's focusing too much on one of Dele's strengths and kind of ignoring the other ones that we know about, which, you know, is that ability to kind of find space in the box. That kind of inventiveness, you know, the flick to Lucas at Ajax, or the nutmegs, you know, that kind of ability to make something happen in the final third, I think is being lost. But I do kind of see the argument that Dele has been in decline really for over 2 years, you know, perhaps 3 years. And perhaps Nuno's just thought, you know, this is a way to just kind of rejuvenate a player who's really struggling and, you know, get him in the side, get him playing regularly, get him, you know, get his rhythm back, and then, you know, maybe we'll see that attacking side of his game, you know, come out more in the future. But
you can work your way into a game, can't you? Mm-hmm. Like, if you're having a poor game, you can, just by covering that amount of distance, you will get yourselves in position where you'll pick up loose balls. I mean, I think he's still top of the stats for Spurs in terms of tackles. Mm-hmm. I think he's our highest tackler.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Which actually tells you a lot in terms of about how he's doing positionally from that central midfield role. But the problem is, I mean, there's been a lot of coverage about this, sure, already, but we're just not creating anything at the moment.
Yeah, it does feel like with the other midfielders we do have, those tackle numbers could probably be made up elsewhere, and that we don't have many players, particularly since Eriksen gone, that can create something out of nothing in the final third. Like, when you've got a player who 2-3 years ago was averaging double figures goals and assists all the time, why would you move him further away from the goal?
I almost stopped thinking about that. It's kind of, I mean, it wasn't long ago.
I think we don't create anything for a long time. Like, and that's largely because of Eriksen's gone, and Dele's not the same kind of player, but at least having him closer to the box, you just kind of, someone who has that kind of ingenuity about him, you have someone who can create something out of nothing.
Before the game, I was sort of having a pint and watching some old Chelsea Spurs in the stadium.
Sorry, we didn't even ask this. Did you enjoy the experience of just being back?
I loved being back. So, like I said, it's my first time back as a fan in a long while, and it was great. Honestly, the pre, getting the train up, having a couple of drinks in the stadium, just being a fan. Like, went to a couple of games behind closed doors. That's it. You guys all didn't love that experience, I have to say. So, yeah, it was so nice to be back, and I saw some people up there I've not seen in a long time, and that was really nice. And they, as I was saying, they had some old Spurs Chelsea fixtures on. I was like, it's not going to be like this. That's what I'm saying. But what was noticeable was, well, there was the 2-0 game where it was just Eriksen to Dele. Mm-hmm. There's the goal in the FA Cup where it was the most outrageous assist from Eriksen to Dele. From like
round the back.
And all I kept thinking was, we don't have an Eriksen who can find that ball. We just don't have that player at the moment. We've never replaced him since he left. And Dele being further back up the pitch has never worked for him in terms of being able to create from that far back. So, because he doesn't have that passing range. It's not as
you think Kane would be able to find him in the same type of way, like he's just done for Son. I mean, I suppose the other thing with Dele is, from memory, Alderweireld used to be very good at being out as well.
Yeah.
That Chelsea goal that he scored, where I actually bad at that one.
Yeah, Dyer. But we could, that means we could do it again. That means we do have at least some personnel to kind of try and make up that.
But we're talking about him high up the pitch here. Yeah. That's what I mean. If, if you're just tucking him in at left back, you're not going to do a 30-yard ball. He's not going to find his way in.
So explain, when I said about the left back, it was a very throwaway comment. I didn't really explain that. Explain what you saw in the second half.
So I was sitting right behind where Reguilon was, basically. And every time he pushed on, and it was the same for Emerson, the two central midfielders in Delhi and it was Ndombele would go into the space that they left. Ndombele was getting more progressive from his area, but Delhi was very much covering the space left down the right, our left-hand side. And it meant that he was picking up the ball there quite a lot, and we were shifting it. What we did manage to do quite well, shift it quickly around the left-back position to create space for Ndombele on the right-hand side, which worked a couple of times. But all in all, it meant that he became a massive passenger, especially in the second half, where he was covering for Reguilon, who wasn't managing to get behind Azpilicueta, because, and this is where Chelsea deserve massive credit, they are just brilliant at defending. Like, their back line in that second half, they looked so comfortable.
It's not that
yeah. Think about where Chelsea were about a year and a half ago under Lampard. Like, I think they conceded 50 or 60 goals across the whole season. It was like, it's like an unsolvable kind of issue. All of a sudden, Tuchel comes in January. They tighten things up. They're more streetwise. And I think if you were to go back to particularly around this time last year, I think people would be saying there's not a huge difference between the squads at Spurs and Chelsea. It's not massive, but I'm not saying that we're not there now. But this isn't. It's like we said with Mourinho. It's not an uncoachable team. We can still find a way out of this. There's still solutions and there's still a way to go.
Do you think that'll happen under Nuno?
I don't want to comment at this
time. I think that's the thing. I actually disagree. I think Tuchel comes into a much, much better squad at Chelsea in terms of the depth and the players that they will bring.
In terms of depth, definitely.
And I think that's relevant to Sunday as well, because one of the big criticisms of Nuno from that game is that he didn't react. And I kind of feel like,
brought on one of our many other central midfielders, aka Ollie Skip and Harry Winks.
Skip and Hill, which was about the best he could do.
Yeah. And Hill rocking that weird Errol Brown hot chocolate style moustache. Makes him look like a 70s porn star.
But it was, Chelsea have got players now who aren't getting in their 18-man squad who would probably be starting for Spurs. Or certainly the sort of first subs. So there is a gulf there, and I think the only thing Nuno could have possibly done would be to have started Hill and kept Lo Celso back for the inevitable Ndombele substitution, which was actually what Mourinho did, and it used to work very well.
Yeah.
And then at least Spurs would have had another sort of progressive passer who could have come on into the midfield after an hour. But other than that, I was just thinking, he's gone with the team everyone would have wanted.
Yeah.
Unless the team would probably have cracked if it's either goal in the first half. And he hasn't really got anything to change it up with. So I did feel sympathy for him.
Did you think that we've burned out? Or do you think we were out of thought?
I think it was a combination of both. Like, I do think Ndombele was tired before half time. There was one point where he kind of got the ball, and the first half an hour he had been kind of looking, getting his head up and looking to pass and go, and he just kind of knocked it back, I think. Then he got it back again. He really didn't want it. He just knocked it sideways.
It was a really elaborate gesture, didn't he, to say pass over there.
Yeah, we just kind of looked at each other, a couple of colleagues, and just we looked at each other in the press box and said, well, he's done.
Yeah.
And that was probably 35 minutes or something. So if you think about the conditions that the majority of that team had in the week before, so Dier and Son had barely trained, I think, after injury.
Yeah.
The three South Americans had only trained once with the squad.
Saturday night. They'd
been on Saturday
night.
Yeah. Royals probably had 7 or 8 sessions with the team. You know, it wasn't a huge surprise that Spurs ran out of puff and kind of ideas. So, I think in all, I'm kind of in the camp of it was encouraging, not the camp, which we should acknowledge, which is that Chelsea were kind of holding Spurs at arm's length and then they just stepped up a gear. You know, I've seen that said, and I think it's probably a harsh interpretation. Yeah,
enough, yeah. You've talked to me into feeling a bit more positive about this performance, so you know, if we win tomorrow, then I'm going to be optimistic ahead of the derby, and that's not what I want. I like going and thinking we're going to lose.
The good thing is, whenever the team in form goes into the derby, they tend to lose, I find, and the team often
true,
tends
actually.
To
that's
lose.
That's so
yeah.
true.
So you kind of want another humbling defeat at Wolves and Arsenal to win with the weekend.
Unless Wimbledon do us a massive favour.
just while we're on the midfield, the Celso, where are we at with the Celso? I mean, personally for me, I still think about Project Restart and the run of games that he had there, and I think that is the version of the Celso I'm desperate to see, but I don't know how we find that again. What did you guys make of his performance?
I think he looks like a bit of a victim of system changes at the moment, and that he looks a little bit lost in what he's supposed to be doing or what he's trying to do. And one thing that was very noticeable against Chelsea is he doesn't like, or at least he doesn't look like he likes getting the ball facing away from the goal. And every time he tried to turn, he was getting eaten.
Yeah.
Bear in mind, it's Rudiger that followed him out most of the time, who's just a brilliant defender and hyper aggressive and is like the perfect guy to go after him. But yeah, a bit lost. His performance was, I mean, at times you wouldn't have noticed he was on the pitch. I'm with you. I think he probably wants to be playing a little bit deeper and picking the ball up and driving forward. Whenever I used to watch him back in La Liga, that's what he was getting on the ball way deeper and driving through midfield with the ball like that. Bearing in mind La Liga, the midfield.
When he had that great run in Project Restart, was he playing in a kind of two? In a midfield two with Højbjerg?
I think he
was. It was before Højbjerg.
Before Højbjerg came.
Before Højbjerg came.
I think
yeah,
he was
right.
deeper lying. I think he was receiving the ball as our kind of.
It's like him and Sissoko or.
Because my problem with him is I've just forgotten what he does.
What he does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where he's supposed to be.
Well, he looks like he's never a good start.
I think his thing is drifting with the. I think he is start deeper drift with the ball, luring challenges and then give it and receive it back very quickly and move it on up pitch. Problem with that is, we're also in this identity crisis around Ndombele, around whether he should be sitting deeper or further forward.
Yeah.
And Dele at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you've got some sort of hybrid between Højbjerg, Dele, Lo Celso and Ndombele, and three of those players, you don't know what their position is. You're in a bit of a bind.
The three attacking midfielders who don't really complement each other.
Yeah, it's a good point.
On paper,
he's not right winger. I think we can all
no. Please don't put him right wing again.
No, and he doesn't. In the same way that he doesn't want the ball, that sort of with his back to goal. I don't think he wants the ball with his back to the touchline either.
No.
I don't think he wants to receive it right on touchline because he's not got a huge turn of pace.
No.
He wants to be weaving, more sort of pushing into the field. He wants to be 10 yards inside the touchline. And I think the other thing, just to go back into Ndombele, and I would sort of, we can put him in the beautiful section here because I feel like a lot of the bits that he did well, he did really, really well. But you see with Ndombele, he receives the ball and will be going at a snail's pace, and suddenly he injects a forward pass, cuts between the lines, and you think, oh, well, now we're facing the Chelsea backline.
Yeah.
And he did it against Wren as well so many times. Yeah. I mean, it's no surprise goal comes from the back heel, but he did it 3 or 4 times where you play an instinctive first time pass that gets us then facing the defensive line and we sort of can create an opportunity. But at Dan's point, I feel like he is. It's like when you're playing a computer game, you've only got a limited amount of speed burst to use and you use it
and then
literally the guy's just burned out and he's done.
It's not good when your luxury player is like simultaneously the engine central midfield player.
Yes.
You're kind of hedging all your bets that it needs to be a 10 out of 10 game in order to really kind of succeed.
Or that the opposition are not going to be up to it.
Yeah.
The problem is that Chelsea are up to it.
Yeah.
Like Chelsea's, in terms of the
Chelsea can bring on Kante at half time and that's the blanket laid over him.
I mean, he was phenomenal, wasn't he, as well? He was just everywhere, like as you would expect. But they also moved to a sort of three-man midfield and they had that flexibility and we just didn't have that. You know, we didn't have that opportunity to do anything.
This is like a wider point, like, I know that we're in the middle of the rebuild, but it just feels like the squad planning to this point has just been so awful.
Well, we're still.
We've got a lot of nice pieces, but they just don't fit together.
Yeah, we're still in. What we're seeing at the moment is a few different managers' pieces. aren't we? Like the
and although it was the right decision to sell who was sold over the summer, I think there's a lot of experience missing from that squad now. I mean, Sissoko, Bale, Lamella, Alderweireld must have played, you know, well over 1,000 games in the league between them, and that's all gone, and it's showing, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
What about the ugly stuff? I mean, we've covered this also a bit, but I do feel like I don't want to say that Harry Kane's body language and the way he carried himself was ugly, but I definitely think the fact that we're seeing him look a bit sluggish is a worry.
So there's a debate, right? Whether it's him still sort of getting over the fact he didn't get that move, he's still sort of mentally thinking about that, which you wouldn't blame him for, or it's the fact that he had to play 60 minutes in the Europa Conference League, and he's a little bit older, and he's always, after Europa Thursday night, he's always looked slightly sluggish at the weekend anyway, and with the injuries and age and things like that, are we asking too much of him to play him in that, and then play him against the best team in the league? I don't know, I think probably there's an argument for both, because he lost, by his standard, a lot of individual battles on Sunday.
That used to kill him.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you not think that we just have this kind of conversation about Kane at least once a season, every season now, because we just expect the absolute most of him? Like he was at the Euros this summer, he had the shortened break for, you know, partly his fault, but whatever.
He had quite a long break.
Yeah.
I said length. Well,
whichever way you want to spin it. But, you know, like, if he scores 2 goals in 2 games, it's like, is he the best player in the league? When's he gonna become Spurs' record goal scorer? When's he gonna break Shearer's record? All that. But he's what is it now? 4 games without a goal.
Well, he's almost guaranteed to score against Arsenal.
Get that penalty. Yeah. I wonder about this. I hate the narrative like, oh, Kane drops too deep. You're playing on the left-hand side, you're going to have to come a little bit deeper. Mm. Like, there's not too much he can do around that. People seem to absolutely hammer him for it.
Yeah, but that's a basic misunderstanding of how football works, isn't it? Like, just saying, oh, just get him in the box. Well, who was putting crosses into the box? The ball would have never got there. The question that we can ask is, who is Kane dropping deep to play the ball to?
Mm. Yeah.
And that's where I think Dele Alli is, well, should be higher up the pitch.
Yeah.
And that's where I think we are losing. Because if Son, I mean, to be fair, Son then has to go up against 3 centre-backs. If Kane drops in and one comes with him, which they weren't going with him a lot of the time, then...
I do think that it feels a bit more significant with Kane this time. You know, I totally agree with Sean that writing him off or even doubting him in the slightest is really not a good idea and not something I want to be doing on this podcast. But he's barely had a touch in the box this season. He's barely had a sniff at goal in the Premier League. You know, I think the Palace game was a kind of historic statistical low for him in terms of touches in the box and shots. So, you know, clearly Nuno needs to find a solution. But I also think there's probably an element of Kane being a bit fed up. I mean, I don't know if I buy the kind of Roy Keane narrative of, you know, haul him off, he's a disgrace. you know, he doesn't look like a happy chap me. And I think, you know, all is not particularly well there.
Do you think if he's getting 2 or 3 chances and scoring a goal, maybe 2 goals in a couple of the games so far, with looking at the same Harry Kane, do you think he's still carrying himself as a little bit deflated if he's still scoring?
I think Harry Kane's always happy when he's scoring. So, yeah, probably part of his body language is down to the fact that it's just not happening on the pitch. You know, however he's feeling about Spurs, we all know he's going to be chasing these individual records. And obviously, you know, Greaves has come up this week, and we all know that Shearer is in his sights as well. I just think it's probably a combination of all the things we've mentioned. There'll be the fitness thing, there'll be the disappointment, there'll be the Nuno system. which is clearly not, kind of not getting the best out of him. And you know, the fact is, particularly when Lucas and Bergvall are injured, it just isn't really much chance to rotate him, is there? I mean, I can't see how he can really be dropped for the Wolves game unless Dane Scarlett plays, which is a big ask for a 17-18-year-old.
How did we not sign a striker? Just even a big shit striker. How did we not sign a striker?
How much are we missing Llorente, God say? Oh, do you know what I mean?
That was mad like that. Let him leave, but it just seems bizarre that for whatever reason, the fifth year running, we haven't gone and just... Like, if Danny Ings was available, if Edouard from Celtic was available, I can't understand how those two were overlooked as, like, a brilliant option for Spurs, even to play as a two. I mean, Danny Ings can play as a two, Edouard can play as a two. Like,
those are just two options. I buy this nonsense argument that no one will come to Tottenham because they can't sit behind Harry Kane. Like, what are we talking about here? Like... Yes, you'll get slightly less game time, but at the end of the day, you're gonna. If you've got a young, exciting striker like Watkins, is a great opportunity. Mm.
Daka at Leicester. Well. Like, he knows he's going to play second fiddle to Jamie Vardy.
I feel like we could do this with a lot of opposition. We were doing it earlier with how many wingers in the Prem would walk into our team.
Yeah, Ismail Assar came up a couple of times. Yes,
I was to Ismail Assar. Just before we finish up, so two things to touch on, or three actually. So, overriding feeling is like, chill out on Nuno, give it some time, let it play out, or are we seeing things that maybe that need to be addressed sooner rather than later?
Ask me on Monday.
Okay.
Oh, that's actually, I mean, I'm actually very much in the belief that you have to. I said at the beginning, Mourinho, when I was hating it, absolutely hating it, I said you have to give him time because... You just cannot judge a football manager on 6-7 games. You have to give them half a year with the team. And I think if you speak to most Spurs fans, that the expectation was fairly low this year. So maybe people need to remember that after the first three games, everyone got a little bit top of the league, haven't conceded a goal. But the Wolves game was lucky. The City game was well managed, and I can't. What was the other game?
Watford.
So yeah, exactly.
I mean, to answer your question, both. So I think there are things he needs to address, but also we need to chill out on it and give him time.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that we can use the idea of that first 45 and extend it out to 50, 60, and see. Progress basically, because I think, like he said in his presser, that he said he understands that Spurs fans, I think he said that he understands that Spurs fans particularly enjoyed that first half. He gets why they got a lot from it.
Yeah, as I said, I think there's a future in that Spurs performance in the first half, and it just isn't in the way he set up at Palace. And I hope that, unlike Mourinho, he's able to kind of realise that and adapt and not just kind of. Stick with a system that clearly is going nowhere.
That's a really good point, because it almost felt like Mourinho would hear the fans saying they enjoyed that. It's like, oh, you like that, do you? Well, have this. And then just do the opposite of what fans like.
But I did wonder, and this may be complete nonsense, but like Mourinho started last season kind of quite open, and there were all those quite entertaining games, and like the Man U thrashing. And then you got really spooked by the West Ham game and kind of shut up shop.
And Liverpool.
Yeah, and I did wonder whether Nuno might do the opposite. And he started kind of really conservatively and solid, and then maybe got spooked by the Palace defeat, and when it goes a bit more front foot. Yeah. It's just a working theory at the moment.
I like it.
There were very fine margins in that first half. If Son takes a better touch, he'd slot that home. And if Reguilon makes a better decision, those are two... I mean, our XG in the first half was all right. Our XG in the second half was
Did it go up?
No, it didn't.
In the second half, no.
I think it was 4.1 to like 0 point something in the second half. It was not the best. Yeah, it was ugly.
Let's talk Arsenal then. Because, I mean, by the time this goes out, some people will hear it before we play Wolves. If not, hopefully, we will have just won against Wolves. Fingers crossed. Going into the derby, how do we feel about... playing Arsenal at this point? I mean, Sean, you mentioned earlier on they've won a couple of games, but they've won 1-0 and Norwich got plenty away. Burnley got a lot away against Arsenal, and they defended fairly well, which is not something that we're usually attaching to Arsenal sides of late.
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal for the last few years have been... You think we've been a shambles, you should.
It's kind of like Jeremy Kyle, isn't it? When you watch Jeremy Kyle, like, everything can be going wrong in your life, and you go, well, I'm not then. I'm not on the sofa with Jess.
They're just like every Arsenal fan I know is just utterly miserable.
Even after the two wins,
they're just kind of clawing onto things. They're just like, yeah, Ramsdale wasn't shit. Yeah, Ben White didn't get bullied all the time. Yeah,
clutching.
Yeah, I would be worried if we don't. I'm definitely worried if we lose. A draw might be acceptable, but we can't lose this game.
They always show up against Spurs.
Yeah, it's the one game that they show up in. And also, I mean, look, I think if we press Arsenal like we press Chelsea in that first half, we'll get joy. We'll get a lot of joy. It's just, again, whether we can... What I'm more comfortable with is if we shop against Arsenal, if we're 1-0 or 2-0 against Arsenal, I'd be much more confident shutting up shop against that Arsenal side and going, right, okay, you can try and break us down now. Because they've proven that they're struggling to do it.
And even if they do, our counter-attack that we showed last year, we can counter-attack.
Yeah, it's just, again, are we playing Sonny into the ground? Are we asking a lot of Brian Hill, potentially, to I mean... Not that we're down to the bare bones, but on the attacking options, to lose Lucas and Bergwijn this early on is really frustrating. And then also, I think that gives more reason to give Nuno a little bit of time, because it looked better when we had the options, those three as an option.
Okay, last thing. I'd love to touch on Jimmy Greaves just a little bit. But we might have to literally, as I was saying before the pod, might have to do this through the eyes of our parents, of our folks, or our uncles, etc., because I sort of sent the word out to my dad and his brothers in the morning, and I was like, look, I'd love to know your memories of him playing, because we didn't see him play. So did anyone get any stories, or did anyone remember growing up and being told about Jimmy Greaves?
I've watched plenty of his goals on YouTube, the ones that are available, and that's about the best I can do.
So the thing that came up with my dad and my uncle is that people talk about him being like this ruthless goal scorer, and that it was this art that he had made, but they said that because of that, no one really appreciates how good a sort of passer he was to the ball, that he had an amazing switch pass on him that never gets talked about, because he, like, you see the goal of him scoring against Man United where he dribbles the team and he's sort of rolling the ball in, and that he actually often could come deep and sort of make play. But one of the things that I got a lot of joy from the other day, like you say, Dan, is like seeing all of these things, you only get it from one angle.
Yeah,
it's very
course.
Like pure. It's very authentic. You're getting it from one angle, you're getting it in black and white.
It's a fable.
It's the end of the myth, isn't it? It's like the last era of football myth where asking for stories, you get stories, as opposed to, oh, well, here, I'll show it from 17 angles.
I'm a bit like Dan, to be honest. Like, I've only seen clips on YouTube and clips that have been sort of thrown around on Twitter. But one thing that always struck me is how he moves differently to older players, older generation players. He moves more like a modern player in his body shape. And moves the ball really well. And I mean, I think Spurs tweeted the other day, our best ever player. And I was like, well, is that taking shots at the certain current man? But clearly, an absolute legend. And
your dad used to say, Jimmy Greaves was the best.
Jimmy Greaves and Glenn Hoddle. Those are his two. I think he liked, hard not to argue with those two, basically. Yeah. An incredible player and a lovely bloke. Everyone seemed to only have the best words about him, so that's lovely.
And I suppose we were talking about Harry Kane, Shawnee, earlier on as well. It's only when you consider that at the time that he was playing, that this guy was getting kicks lumps out of. The rules were completely different, and he still scored 266 goals. I mean, he averaged, it was like 0.7 goals a game or something like that. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I remember I did a piece on him a couple of years ago, and I just went through all the numbers, and... Like, you think back then, like, they didn't it wasn't. It's more of a numbers game now, isn't it? Like you think about stats and stuff, but his numbers then compared to a lot of other strikers, just his consistency, utterly unbelievable record. And you know, as a Spurs fan, you do kind of, when you get asked like, "Oh, surely Kane is the greatest Spurs player ever?" I do think I think the tweet was trying to right a few wrongs in that.
Exactly.
Greaves was just this generational player who, like you said, it's like he's a fable, he's a legend. It's the only way we really see him. We only have the limited YouTube footage.
Yeah.
Everything else is just cut from word of mouth, and we watch Kane all the time. It's just, it's not the kind of same like that.
But also, like, he did it in an era when we were winning. We were winning, you know. We were one of the, if not the, there's that lovely quote at the beginning of, you know, they play the montage just before the start of the game, and he says, well, they're the finest team in the country, you know, maybe in the world, finest team in Great Britain, possibly the world.
And my friend made that.
So really? Every time I hear it, I'm like, oh, that's like, that's kind of quite nice. We've got something.
It's like he's there with, I know, he was.
It's a lovely quote, that.
Yeah.
That's a great quote.
It's really annoying that he wasn't part of the title winning team, because when you think of Spurs like the 60 cents, what are you thinking of? Like the buses going down the high road and the ticker tape and stuff and the way White Hart Lane used to look.
Having said that, he was in the team that won the first European trophy, for a British side, and that's like, I mean, that's just when you consider as well that we often get beaten with that shitty stick of like, you're not a big club, you know, or in comparison to some of the other teams that have done it, like it. I think it's always nice to remember that the history that Spurs have, even though recency bias has become a thing, the history that Spurs have is like A, very, very impressive, and B, reliant on people like him that made that happen.
Yeah, so, because people, I certainly younger people kind of wonder why Spurs are considered this big club, why they have this big stadium, why they have so many fans. It's sort of like, Greaves was massive part of the reason why Spurs were so popular back in those days when football was really becoming a mainstream thing.
Yeah, it's nice to have a benchmark as well, isn't it? It's nice to have something sitting there, because I mean, if whatever happens happens, if Harry Kane does make 266, brilliant, we'll all like be overjoyed with that. If he doesn't,
there's still people have done it before. Yeah, exactly. His record for England as well is absolute disgrace. Yeah. I think it's like 44 and 56
hat tricks.
would have played the World Cup final if he didn't get injured early in the tournament.
Yeah,
let's not get twisted. That he so deserved the knighthood.
He
didn't get his World Cup winners medal until Gordon Brown. Like in 10 Downing Street, getting it, wasn't it? Bizarre.
Good on Brown.
Proper Spurs.
Proper coins.
You know when you see anytime you see sort of old archive footage and you just think, God, there were some also rans around at that time.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what are you doing in there? It's so unimportant. Anyway, that's where we're leaving for today.
Wait, go on.
Oh, you've got questions.
I asked for some questions. Yeah, we have to read the questions. So I'll read the questions out. So first up, has Nuno implemented a style of play that you're happy with?
Who's that from?
That's from Alex Purdy.
Alex Purdy, hi.
In the last one game, yes.
Yeah, okay. Previously?
Not really.
Yeah.
I think we've covered this.
Yeah.
If he sticks with the first half against Chelsea,
But this is fair, right? Because this is a manager who's young in his time at Tottenham. He's going to have to try things out and see if they work. Like, I think... I did put out a tweet on the way home saying, "What managers have turned a whole club around in the first 10 games?"
Shout out John O'Blaine. I saw it straight in on that one.
Loads of people came up with like stupid answers who then went on to fail in the next 10 games. But my point was, patience.
I'm with them. Give me first half Spurs against Chelsea for 90 minutes.
Yes, and there's another one. Is his current style better than Mourinho ball so far?
Oh, good question. I liked the way Son and Kane played under Mourinho. I didn't like how deep we sat.
It depends which kind of Mourinho ball. Is it?
Yeah.
Is it the stretch where every single week was literally the worst performance we've ever seen? Or is it at least when we were smacking the bottom half fodder?
I want to add a caveat as well here, in that if Mourinho had wanted to, if Nuno had at his disposal, what Mourinho had at his disposal in terms of fit squad and kind of like available players, I think Nuno would be playing better football.
It's tough, isn't it? Yeah, longevity means that there were several stars under Mourinho, all on that sort of with the similar.
Similar. We piped Palace, right, under Mourinho. Did we, at home, did we? We
thought it was 4-0.
Yeah. So like,
that's a really good performance.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were times. I think yeah. So still too early for that one. Another question comes from Ramsad, who asks, if Manchester City come in with a £100 million bid again in January, should Levy accept it and buy some good forward players? Which?
No for me.
No for you. Shawnee?
No, not in January.
Not in January, Dan.
I think there's an argument for it. I'm not saying you should.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really reluctant to say Spurs should sell Harry Kane. But I think that Spurs are in the midst of a rebuild now. It's obvious to everyone. And the players they've signed this summer look to me like good signings, but signings that, certainly in the case of Hill, Sarr, who won't even be here till next year, Gallini, they look like players who are going to be for the next 2 or 3 years. So with that in mind, Spurs are obviously aiming to maybe be back in the top four in a couple of years' time, in which case, there is an argument for really accelerating that process by offloading a big player. And
you'd have to know who it is, right? You'd have to know who that next guy is, right?
You'd have to be confident that you could spend the money on 2 or 3 of the best sort of 18 to 21 year olds in the world. And if you didn't think you could get them, then there'd be no point in doing it.
Mm. Yeah, I think I'm sort of closer to Dan's now, just in terms of would it be better for everyone? But obviously these things can turn so quickly. I don't want to sell him. That comes first, I think.
I also think as well, because he hasn't scored for a few games, we're sitting here being...
If Casey Murphy wins the derby on Sunday, I think that's a different answer.
Yeah, if he's got the hat-trick against Arsenal.
Yeah, good point.
Maybe he doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I think...
Completes our...
I think that completes it, yeah.
Wicked. Well, look, thanks so much for listening. Subscribe if you haven't already, so we pop up in your feed. You can make sure that you follow all the guys on social as well. Be much appreciated. Handles are in the description. We'll be back. Look, I'm not going to promise, but hopefully we'll be back later on in the week to look ahead to Arsenal more specifically. If not, we'll be back on Monday. And, I mean, God knows what sort of mood we'll be in. Fingers crossed it's a good one. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you all next time.
Watching Tottenham on a Tuesday night.